This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
I'm Helen Farmer. Fantastic to have you with us on the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast, exploring Expo 2020 with kids. We were talking about the must-dos, the must-packs, where to go and what to eat with roving reporter and mum of two, Dina Booty. She has been there about five times a week since it opened, so she is the one in the know, plus her most favourite pavilion for families. And speaking to the gypsy chef himself, David Myers is the man behind Adrift Burger Bar at Expo 2020, talking about some of the trends in food, how the pandemic has affected him, and what we can look forward to in the future. And Veganuary is underway. Are you taking part? We're speaking to Simon Wright, who's created the food element of a brand new vegan market and event that's starting on the 14th of January. What impact has veganism had on the UAE food scene? And it's not just the food. Speaking to the founder of Not Just for Vegans, a market selling, yes, some snacks, but also some accessories, fashion and more. And in light of the recent weather and a few incidents too, in conversation with Laura Brown, she is the founder of Hike UAE. So if you are heading to the hills over the weekend, how to do it safely.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Exploring Expo over the course of the afternoon and in conversation with a roving reporter and mum of two, Dina Booty, joining us to explain some of her top picks and indeed tips for Expo with the family. Dina, Happy New Year. How are you?
Hey, Happy New Year to you too. I am... I want to say really good, a little anxious these days, but life is good and I'm healthy, so happy.
Good. Staying positive, testing negative and all that good stuff. Are the boys at school or are they distance learning?
They were at school for one day and then they had to go to online learning. So it has been fun times all around. I had no idea just how impatient I am.
You're not alone. You are not alone. We had our first tears this morning. Happily, they weren't mine. Ooh. They were my daughter's. But yeah, it's real. It is real. And you're, of course, juggling super busy life and job. And you're at Expo pretty much every day. How many times do you think you've been to the Expo 2020 site since it opened, Dina?
Well, I would say I average three times a week for work and then probably once or twice more just for fun. So a lot. I was there for the opening ceremony as well before it started. So, yeah, it definitely feels like my office and my second home these days.
What an office. And how many times have you taken the family, do you think?
Let's say five times. Yeah. And they've had an amazing time every time we go. They always want to go back.
Ours are exactly the same. I would say it's been a combination of the fun, so the pavilions, the attractions, the events, also the food. Actually, on next week's show, we are going to be cooking with Bread Ahead, which is the pizza, the donuts. So be sure to tune into Farmer's Kitchen next week. We'll be talking to you and teaching you how to make some of those favourites. But mine talk a lot about the Expo food. Before we get into some of your favourite pavilions, if people are planning a trip to Expo 2020 with their little ones, what do you feel is the must, you know, take, the essentials and the must know information as well, Dina?
Well, first of all, because the weather's so unpredictable these days, I really recommend that they take both an umbrella and some sunblock, but more than anything, comfortable shoes, because I think people go to Expo and they think they're going to take, you know, pictures all day long, so they won't look really cute. You're going to walk at least 10,000 steps upon with every visit. So you want to make sure you're super comfortable. You've got a stroller for the kids. You've got a scooter for them. You can also rent a bike for 20 dirhams a day. So just make sure that you're very comfortable and very equipped to be mobile, because there's a lot of distances.
There really is. It's a huge site. And I think that planning element is really important, because you're never going to get through it in a day. And maybe it's a case of going and saying, today we're going to do mobility. Today we're going to, you know, choose five pavilions that are kind of close to each other and have lunch, because otherwise that 10,000 steps is going to get to 30 and then you're going to have some very whingy children by the end of the day. And yeah, really good point about the scooters. Kids can have scooters. And we see, of course, course, the buggies and the trains going on, but they're absolutely not to be relied upon for making sure you get door to door of where you need to be. What about the
absolutely not? And then I would also say the water bottles, because they do have refilling stations for your water bottles. So make sure to, you know, it's also really environmentally friendly, which is great. And in case people don't know this, all students are free. So any student around the world, no matter what age, is free. And nannies are free, and so are drivers. So if they're coming with you, bring them along for the ride, have them enter, and they're about to have a blast as well.
Absolutely right. I think we forget actually just how many people can get access to the site. Yes, absolutely free. We're going to talk next about some of your favourite pavilions and the attractions too, plus some of those handy hints and tricks for getting the most out of Expo 2020 Dubai.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We've got Duna Booty with us, roving reporter, Expo regular and mum of two, live on the line, talking about some of the big hits in their family when it comes to going to Expo and getting the most out of your time there. Now, we've only been to Expo a couple of times with the kids. I always want to go in the morning when it's quieter, but mine desperately want to meet Opti, who doesn't come out until 4 o'clock. So we need to go back and have an evening experience. Dina, in terms of time of day, what's been most successful with you and the gang?
So I always like to go at 9 a.m. because there's so many beautiful parks at Expo 2020 Dubai, and they are open at 9 a.m. and the pavilions only open at 10 a.m. So it's great to get in there, beat the crowds, and you have the parks all to yourself, and the weather's also beautiful. So I highly recommend that. There's also there's obviously the Rashid's Park and Latifah's Adventures, but there's also right by the Sustainability Terra Pavilion, there's also a beautiful park hidden right behind it. I think it's called the Octopus Park, and it has three massive slides that I highly, highly recommend.
Ooh,
very, very cute.
Didn't know about that. The kids' parks
and
are
make sure
gorgeous.
As well when you're yes. walking in to grab yourself a passport, which is only 20 dirhams, but they're at the souvenir stands. And I think they're so much fun because as you make your way from one pavilion to another, the kids are just going to love having that passport stamped. And it is, in fact, a great souvenir to hold on to.
Absolutely is. So your passports, your water bottles, your scooters. And I was kind of surprised by how much was free. Well, I remember we went for lunch where I was like, okay, well, we'll get lunch in 15 minutes, you know, try and hold it off as long as possible. We'll have a walk around. And my girl spotted the carousel and I was like, oh, okay, I'll go over. How much is the carousel, please? It's free. Yep, girls, we're going on the carousel. Happy days. Go on as many times as you want. Mummy's going to sit here and watch you for the next 15 minutes. But there are some attractions, obviously, that are paid for. Garden in the Sky, for example. But I thought it was absolutely worth it. We haven't talked about the waterfall yet. When we're talking about essentials to pack, that huge water feature in the middle, either bring spare clothes or do it right at the end of the day. Did your boys get absolutely soaked?
Mine didn't get soaked, surprisingly, but they're also wearing shorts. And I would say one thing about the water feature, which often people miss out on, is they either go during the day or at night, and it's a completely different experience because I'm not sure if you're there during daytime or nighttime, Helen, but at night, the water actually turns different colors.
Oh, wow.
And it is just such a spectacular, it's just honestly spectacular. It is a very different atmosphere, and it's choreographed to the music. So I recommend getting there late enough that you can kind of do a bit of both, or wait till 5:30 so that you can enjoy both waterfall experiences.
I'm amazed your kids didn't get soaked. Mine were literally rolling around in the water.
You know what? They actually got soaked at the water. I'm going to recommend the Saudi Pavilion. If I can recommend any country pavilion, it would be Germany and Saudi. I'll get to Germany in just a bit. But Saudi is so much fun for the kids, and I really wasn't expecting it. Have you been there yet, Helen?
No, I've got my notes in my phone. So next we want to go to Luxembourg, Hungary, and Saudi. So those are our next on the list. Why Saudi?
Yeah, that's a pretty good list.
What makes it so
Saudi's
good?
Saudi is just amazing because no matter, first of all, there's never a lineup. So even if you don't manage to book that skip queue feature on your Expo app, you can still go there and know that you're going to get in without having to line up. And the reason I love Saudi so much is that it is so much fun and such and so visually stimulating for the whole family. So when you first enter, there's a waterfall where you kind of have to avoid getting drenched. My parents and the kids all got wet. So yes, definitely pack spare clothes. But it's a really fun waterfall game, I would say. And then there's a room called the Vision Room, which is, I honestly can't explain what it is, but you walk into this massive, almost theater with a huge sphere that was created by five Saudi artists, and your mouth will just drop. It's like nothing I've ever experienced. And as you walk on the floor changes and it turns into all these designs and patterns. It is beautiful. And then on the very bottom floor of the Saudi Pavilion, there's also a waterfall where you can select different symbols that are representative of Saudi, and they will actually form within the water. And lastly, I get very excited about Saudi. The ice cream outside of the pavilion is fantastic. My goodness, it is amazing.
Sold. Okay. Now, Germany is one we have both been to. Mine saw a photo of the yellow ball pit, which has got, I think, 100,000 balls in it, and went bananas. So they were in their absolute element. And I think, honestly, we think a lot about, you know, it's an educational place to go. It's also a hugely fun place to go. A lot of kids learning things completely almost by accident and osmosis. I just want to go to the text line. So we've had lots of messages on this, Dina. I want to give you all your kind of platform to talk about what you've been loving at Expo. 4001 to have your say, what your kids have enjoyed, your do's and don'ts. Mariam saying, my kids have told me they want to see the talking trash cans at Expo. Their friends at school mentioned it. Where can we find them and what do they say? My kids love them. They're dotted around and they really just say, thank you for recycling. And my kids were then like trying to look in my bag for bits of rubbish that they could then put in so they'd hear the voice again. Gina's asking a question, great one here, saying, was there a good place to eat at Expo that isn't so expensive? Find everything a bit high end and I've got four greedy kids to feed plus the hubby. As I said, we went to Bread Ahead and got the most enormous slice of pizza that the three of us shared, and then shared a donut as well. But you've got Ravi's there. You've got all sorts of kind of different, you know, Al Reef Bakery too. What have you come across, Dina, that to keep the hordes? And don't forget, you can take food in as well.
So I next to Saudi, actually, since I was talking about Saudi, is a place called El Bake, which is a Saudi outlet, chicken outlet, which has amazing prices. You can get a massive chicken meal for 20 dirhams. You can get a sandwich that is incredibly filling for 9 dirhams. That is a great deal. And you mentioned Ravi's. I would say if you have picky eaters, you can always go to Talabat, and there's tons and tons of food options there. I personally love the Arabian Tea House, which is Emirati food that you rarely get to enjoy. And that's right by the Al Wasl Dome. So there's a spectacular view there. And they serve these massive platters. So there's lots of different options for the kids. But more than anything, I think for a good deal, you need to get or move on over to the food court, where you'll find some great prices. Just yesterday, I ate from a cart that was from Hong Kong, and I got wontons, I think, for 15 dirhams, and they were chicken wontons, and they were delicious.
Yum. Okay, I'm hungry now. Great question from Jason, and I don't know the answer to this, Dina, but maybe you do. Do they have some sort of procedure if small kids get lost or walk away from their parents? What is that kind of safeguarding? Are there wristbands, or is it? I've got no idea. Have you experienced anything to make sure what little ones aren't wandering off, and if they do, what happens?
So the first time we went in there, my youngest son was 3 years old, and there is a wristband that identifies them and where you add your contact number. So yeah, there's, you know, I have to say the staff at Expo are just incredible. Mm. They're so warm and friendly, and they really go out of their way. So I wouldn't worry too much about your kids getting lost and not being able to track them down. So yeah, those wristbands are very helpful for sure.
Thanks, Dina. Next to the pavilions, we have sung praise for Saudi. We've jumped into a ball pit in Germany. I'm hearing also, I mean, we splashed around in Brazil, which was brilliant as well. What other ones have you enjoyed with your kids?
Well, I would say you mentioned the ball pit at Germany, but I would say the highlight for me at Germany was actually the swings, because was such immersive experience where you're surrounded by a 360 degree screen. There's also a show that was very unexpected for me at Kazakhstan. At the very end, almost like the finale, just as you're leaving the pavilion, is a man who does yoga and acrobats with a robotic hand. I've never seen anything okay. like this. But it works around artificial intelligence, and they both react to each other. It is fascinating to see.
Wow. All right. See, I knew I'd got the right person on. okay, we've got time, I think, for one more pavilion shout out. If anyone's going over the weekend with little ones, when I say little, let's kind of think about that under 10 group. Where can you not miss?
So I would say the sustainability Terra Pavilion is my favorite for kids. First of all, it is massive and it's designed for kids. I have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and we go there every time we visit Expo. You can either choose, there's two sides. There's an ocean side and a garden side. There's so many screens, and I think the most exciting part for them is making decisions. So you have to, you're asked all these questions repeatedly. You have to press a lot of buttons, pull a lot of levers, everything's interactive. And then on the very bottom floor, actually, when you first arrive, there's all these massive games, like massive pinball machines that you play as a family, where you have to get on bikes. And it kind of helps them release their energy as well. So I think I think that is a fantastic, the Terra Pavilion at Sustainability. And again, another one where you don't need to worry about lineups or queuing up.
Dina Bouti, you are beyond a superstar. You've got me really excited to take the kids again. Thank you so much for your time. As I said, I know you're super busy. Going to let you get back to doing your roving reporting, your distance learning and everything else that you've got on your plate. Don't forget, you can check out Dina Bouti. That's B-U-T-T-I on Instagram for all of her insider information and adventures with the kids too.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We're exploring Expo this afternoon. Thank you for all of your messages, your recommendations, and shout out to Eugene from Curiosity Lab saying, in case you don't know, there are 7 kids' workshops across the site, from robotics to art, terrariums and air power. They run every weekend and are free. There's also 7 Mad Lab science bikes teaching cool science for kids and adults dotted around every day, all free. Eugene, thank you for that. Much appreciated.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And huge apologies if you haven't yet had your lunch, because prepare to feel very hungry indeed this hour. We're in conversation with Chef David Myers, the gypsy chef himself, a global citizen, a passionate traveller. And we're lucky enough to have his Adrift Burger Bar right here in Dubai at Expo 2020. David, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me today.
It looks
so excited to be on.
I'm so happy you made time for us, because I know how busy it is when you chefs come into town and you're overseeing your staff. You've got the menu to look at, you know, just getting a bit of a read on the site. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what's been happening for you at Expo. But let's go back a step, because you have trained with some enormous names. You have created a presence all over the world, Tokyo, Singapore, of course, here in Dubai. What brings you back to the UAE and how's it going?
Well, thank you. Yeah, first of all, it is so great to be back in Dubai. I absolutely love it. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. And we are back with having launched our newest concept here called Adrift Burger Bar. And it's at Expo 2020. And it's a concept that I had created in Los Angeles during the height of the pandemic. We were essentially locked down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I traveled 50 weeks out of the year pre-COVID, and I was grounded. So it was an opportunity to really put into play a longtime dream that I had wanted to do of a burger bar, but just never had the right time, right place. But it just happened to work out. Silver lining of this, you know, crazy pandemic. And then here we are back in Dubai having launched at Expo. It's just been incredible.
I will take any positive out of the pandemic, Chef, that is, and anything especially that is burger related. Now, I say this carefully and with love, but there are a lot of burgers and burger bars around internationally and definitely here in Dubai. So what do you think makes yours different? As you say, you had the luxury of time for once to really come up with a concept and some, of course, burgers to really set you apart. What do you think you're offering?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, there are some incredible burger concepts in Dubai. That is for sure. I've been to pretty much all of them and enjoy going. But coming from burger capital of the world, L.A., where who needs another burger place in L.A.? Again, it was just all that timing, you know, of having this time where I literally had to focus in one location for a period of time. But, you know, it just worked out perfectly because I was able to bring to life a burger that had really put us on the map, our restaurant group, quite some time ago in Los Angeles. And since then, that burger has traveled to Tokyo, it's traveled to Singapore. And when we finally created an entire restaurant around it, a Drift Burger Bar, we were able to bring that story to life. And the story is, you know, there's a burger that we put on the menu called the DM Burger. And it's a burger that my mom used to make for me as a kid. It's totally different than any burger that I've ever had growing up. Where I grew up was known for its best fast casual burgers in the U.S. And hers was so different. It was based on this like old school recipe she'd been working with since my grandmother was using it in the 40s.
Wow.
And we put it on my first restaurant, my second restaurant menu in Los Angeles, and it just became a hit. The New York Times said it was a perfect burger. Cool. L.A. Times said it was a burger to beat. I mean, just on and on. So we had quite a reputation for it. And we traveled with it now around the world. We put it in Tokyo, we put it in Singapore, and now it's at Expo 2020.
Okay, this is the opportunity to make tummies rumble across the UAE. Talk us through the DM burger. Let's go literally top to bottom or bottom to top or inside out. How do you put it together and what's in there?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, we've done a little tweak from how my mom used to do it. We've upgraded the burger patty. First of all, we use U.S. 5 ounce Wagyu, basically 5 ounces of Wagyu beef. We've adjusted the mix of how she used to do it. That was just a classic burger when she used to make it, classic burger meat. And then we've added an aged Vermont cheddar to it, which is spectacular. Oh my gosh. The secret slaw has never changed. That's the one item that is as accurate as day one when she used to make it for me. We have a secret sauce that we put together with it, but it's basically a slaw of lettuce and onion, super simple. It's on a toasted brioche bun, and that is it. You know, there is something true about simplicity is the king, right?
Absolutely.
And this burger really is as simple as it gets, but it has such a unique and compelling flavor to it. It's one of a kind.
Oh my goodness. I had the most average lunch at home. I had like half a bagel and now I'm thinking about aged Vermont cheddar and toasted brioche and Wagyu. And I just want to put mine at ease. We had a message earlier about, some of the restaurants at Dubai Expo, you know, you could go out and have a pretty expensive meal and a really high end meal if you wanted to. In terms of price point Adrift, you've got a Wagyu for 55 dirhams. Really, really well priced. Really well priced. So thank you.
Thank you. That was the idea. You know, we wanted this to be a burger for everyone. And the way I look at it is that, you know, this is basically a steak that's dressed down and casual, ready to go out, ready to have fun.
I love this. It's a party steak.
It is.
Can we talk about Expo 2020? I'm curious what your understanding of an expo was before you actually became involved and thought about opening a restaurant there. What were your preconceptions about Expo 2020 Dubai?
Oh my gosh, I am so embarrassed to say that. You know, I just thought this was going to be like a little pop-up type of a stand. Like we've done events around the world where it's, you know, for a few days and they put this little pop-up, you know, very simply done. I had no idea. I should have known, but I had no idea that it was going to be as incredible and dynamic as what it is. I mean, I understood the expo to be a world fair. I thought this was going to be like another type of a convention. I didn't know that Dubai was going to build an entire new city, that they were going to outfit actual restaurants. I mean, this restaurant, we can literally pick it up and drop it into any city in the world, and it will run just like a normal restaurant. Like, you're investing a lot of money into it. So, once again, leave it to Dubai to just absolutely blow everybody's minds. Like, just, it was incredible. Truly one of a kind type of an experience. It's really one of those gifts of, you know, experiencing something that is once in a lifetime.
I'm so glad you were honest about that, because I think a lot of people will be nodding along, because I think so many of us didn't quite understand how Expo would materialize and present. We heard the ideas and we'd heard, you know, the concepts, and we of course thought about pavilions that were going to be there. But one thing that's become a real star of the show is the food. And I personally had massively underestimated that. I was thinking much the same. You know, we grab a snack. I hadn't thought about pavilions doing, you know, rooftop restaurants, or, you know, bringing in guest chefs from around the world and there being tasting menus and the most, you know, incredible, I mean, pop-up. It's a 6-month pop-up. It's a, you know, it's a residency as such. And now that we've got Facebook groups dedicated to Expo Eats, we've got people sharing their tips here on 4001. And it's become this real kind of living, breathing hub and celebration of food. Have you actually had a chance to go and eat much around the Expo site yet, Chef?
Yes, I have. You know, I'm so grateful that we've done a little bit of filming. And so it gave me the opportunity to be able to go out, explore some of the other restaurant experiences, try the food. And once again, I mean, just I'm completely impressed. It is incredible what, you know, everyone was able to achieve in such a short period of time. Mm-hmm. Our partner who's doing a Drift Burger Bar with us, Gates Hospitality, Naeem, their CEO, he's running six different concepts at Expo alone. And again, you know, we're with one, and one is challenging enough, but I can't even imagine with six, and they're all from various degrees of styles of cuisine to, you know, ultra luxurious to the simplicity of our burger bar. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool overall how Expo has been curated, you know, from Akabalare, the African food hall.
Amazing.
I don't know if you've been there, but so cool. I mean, bringing in all of these incredible chefs from different regions of Africa, showcasing their take on the cuisine and the ingredients from there. I've never had a lot of those dishes.
Same.
Or even used those ingredients. So as a chef, I was excited. I was super pumped for it.
I think that's exactly it. I went exactly there and met Chef Alexander Smalls a few weeks ago, and it was like, okay, I'm at Expo, I'm going to have some goat ribs for my lunch, and then we can go downstairs and have some, you know, jerk duck. Like it is really incredible when we take a step back, as you say. But, you know, I think perhaps we'd all, not misunderstood, but maybe underestimated how much of a role food was going to play. Now, there is a vegan festival coming to Expo very soon, and your menu at Adrift Burger Bar, of course, has a meat alternative. You've got the impossible. Can I ask you, and I want you to be dead honest, how do you rate the impossible, and how's it going down?
Well, first of all, we are offering we call it Veganary, where basically we have the ability to bring the Impossible Patty to all of our burgers across the board. So the Adrift,
cool.
The DM, the Classic, even the Action Hero Body Burger. So it's a great way for you know, individuals who are vegetarian or vegan who really want to explore the different type of burger offerings that we have. So we're doing that not just here in Dubai, but also in Los Angeles.
That's very cool.
I think, yeah, it's going to be super cool. And our, you know, our Earth Burger is basically, it's vegan bread, vegan cheese, a vegan mayo, the Impossible Patty, of course. And so it completely fits, you know, a vegan lifestyle. And of course, they could have that with our curry leaf fries. So it's a perfect combo. You know, the way I look at it is, I think as a plant-based patty goes, that Impossible does a really, really good job. I think it's incredible. And, you know, our guests love it. And I think it really also comes down to how it's paired. You know, mm-hmm. if somebody is going to have an Impossible patty in a burger, you know, they really want to have that experience of a burger. And so we, you know, tried to do that with our various, you know, different types of burgers that we have, whether it's, you know, again, from the DM or the Adrift one. So I think it's a great way to get try.
It's all about Chef David Myers. We're lucky enough to have him on the show this afternoon talking about, of course, about burgers, but we're going to be going back in time where he got his start next, his first foodie memories, and later we can't have a missions chef on the show without asking for his last meal on earth. We're putting together that dream menu very soon.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Speaking now to Chef David Myers, the Gypsy Chef, global citizen, passionate traveller, and of course, incredible foodie. He has got restaurants across the globe, LA, Tokyo, Singapore, and of course, here in Dubai, we've got a Drift Burger Bar at Expo 2020. And we are talking, of course, burgers. I'm very, very sorry to anyone who hasn't had their lunch. I am absolutely starving after hearing about all about this. But David, let's go back a little bit, if you don't mind. You talk about your home is LA now, is that right? Where were you born?
Yeah, that's right. LA is home. I was born in Boston, actually, but have been living in LA for over 20 years now. So I feel like I definitely am a true Angeleno at this point.
You've been embraced by the other coast. So what was it like growing up in Boston? Who was cooking and what were you eating as a child?
Well, yeah. So, you know, Boston is an incredible food town. I actually grew had left there when I was relatively young, and had moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, of all places. And so I was lucky enough that my grandparents had, you know, I spent a lot of time there on the weekends, and they had an unbelievable garden, which had basically every type of fruit and vegetable that you can imagine, and even fruit trees and nut trees. And it was just an incredible experience as a kid, aside from the fact that I was always pulled in to do all of the work and picking the vegetables and the fruits, which I was not a fan of. I would rather be out playing with my friends when I was younger. But it was such an incredible experience, because what I learned and recall is how it really helped me to develop my palate. So I was always surrounded by impeccable product that just tasted good. You know, I mean, you know when a tomato's in season, you know when corn is at its peak, you know, and just kind of live with the seasons. And it was such a cool experience. You know, my grandparents had actually, the garden was big enough that they used to sell all the vegetables and fruits at the end of their driveway. Yeah. And so they saved up all this money over, you know, 18 years and used that money to help put me through school, wow. Which was just, I can't even go back and how grateful I am for that, you know, and their insight around that. It was just incredible.
What a privilege to be around that produce. And as you say, it probably, of course, did lots for your palate and understanding that seasonality and smelling ripeness and knowing how things grow together and what works together. But you also, at a young age, understood that food journey from, you know, growing to cooking to eating and enjoying. And unfortunately, I think a lot of kids these days, through no fault of their own, aren't as privileged as to really understand where food comes from an awful lot. What are you seeing internationally around that?
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, I will say this, though. I think that while a lot of people are not growing up as I did, where, you know, we were surrounded by it with the garden, we were, you know, brought in to help cook when everyone was cooking as a family. You know, I was really inundated at a young age with that, and I actually enjoyed it. I really kind of just had a lot of fun. It was a very relaxing time. I do think nowadays, though, as much as some kids do not have that opportunity to do that, their life's maybe too busy, they're too focused on other things. I also think that there is just an incredible wealth of knowledge and experience through travels, where families are traveling more, they're dining out. I mean, we have so many kids coming to our restaurants, and they are as educated as our chefs are. It's unbelievable. They're watching YouTube. They're following chefs on Instagram. They're foodies. I mean, it is so cool to see. We've had young kids that are writing blogs about food. We've had some here in Dubai that came to our restaurants that were just insanely passionate about, you know, quality of ingredients and cooking and how you make a certain dish. So I'm really inspired by that. I think it's going to be great, you know, as chefs develop and these young people come up and, you know, make a mark.
I've never thought about it like that before, to be honest. But I think a lot of that is to do with the perception of the job of a chef that's changed an awful lot over the last kind of, you know, 20 to 30 years. You know, in terms of, you've got people such as yourself, you have people on TV, and I know you've been on an awful lot of shows in your time as well, who are hailed and heralded as being these tastemakers and these talents, these creatives that kids can look up to. Whereas, you know, historically we had chefs and cooks hidden in the kitchen, and you might say thank you if they come to your table, but now there's a platform to really understand what that job is and why it is so exciting, right?
Absolutely. You know, I just look at this as another entrepreneurial endeavor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the next generation, as they continue to come up, you know, if they choose to get into this business, it's still a very hard business. It's still very challenging. There's still a lot of work. There's still a ton of hours. None of that has ever changed. I think if anything, it's become even more challenging because you have to be amazing at marketing. You have to be able to get out there and articulate your brand, articulate yourself, you know, and be the greatest salesman in the world. And also keep people excited through experiences and coming back over and over, when there's so many other great restaurants out there to explore as well. So it's really, really challenging. But, you know, I think when kids see chefs on TV shows, when they see their books, when they see them on YouTube, when they meet them in person, you know, there's something exciting about the lifestyle of, you know, being surrounded by food, creating experiences for people, making people happy through food. And for me, getting to travel. Getting to, you know, experience new cultures and flavors, and then using that as my guide in creating new concepts. that I, you know, I found my calling. And so I'm so thankful for that. And I think kids are going to be able to really make an even bigger mark than, you know, what a lot of us have done already.
Chef David Myers with us this afternoon. We are going to be talking about travel next, how the pandemic has ultimately impacted food around the world, and perhaps how it's even how we order what we eat now, and what his plans are for 2022.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
In conversation with Chef David Myers, and I'm very keen to get your take on this. When we look back, it's been almost 2 years since we first heard those words, COVID-19, and we've talked a lot about how the pandemic has changed the way we work. But what about the way we eat? What about you? Has it encouraged you to eat out more, eat out less? Have you changed your dietary habits? We've got Rocky saying, cooking more so I can spend less. I think it's an interesting one. Here's Luca.
Hi, my name is Luca. I used to be a chef, and I'm a little bit involved in the food industry for a while. I was told by a research that before COVID, 75% of the money spent by families outside of their own kitchen, so for the food made on their own stove, was on delivery. Obviously, COVID made this number bigger, and apparently now 90% of the food spent by families outside of their own kitchen is on delivery, which has been increasingly bigger, as you can see from the traffic on the road. Mm-hmm. So basically, people stop cooking even more than before. So the delivery business is increasing more and more. So to me, of course, it is an advantage if I do deliveries, but the culture of cooking is dying. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong as well, Luca. I love that phrase, the culture of cooking, and it's something we can all, you know, certainly try and foster in our kids as well. Joined now by Chef David Myers. He's based in LA, but his restaurants are found across the globe, Tokyo, Singapore, and yes, here in Dubai, where he has legendary burgers at Adrift Burger Bar at Expo 2020. So can I ask you personally, Chef, and I guess professionally as well, you know, what has the impact been of the pandemic? You mentioned you've gone from traveling 50 weeks out of every year to experiencing pretty significant lockdown last year. How do you feel it's affected your business and your outlook as a chef, perhaps?
Well, I have to say, you know, it's such an extraordinary time. And I didn't travel for a year and a half. And that was the biggest, you know, change. That was a bit shocking. But I will say this, I didn't miss it, which is kind of crazy. I immediately set out, you know, after the first 2 weeks of Netflix and wine and wondering what the heck is going to go on in the world, to put together, you know, three really big goals. And one of them was to get in the best shape of my life. Two was to learn Japanese, and three was to open up a new business, which we did with the Adrift Burger Bar. So, you know, it's funny because this will be tied into, you know, what I think about how has the pandemic shifted eating, right? So during that time, everything was locked down, indoor dining, outdoor dining. It was basically takeaway delivery. So I decided to basically do what I love, and that's cook every single night. And that really helped me to, aside from hiring a trainer, put together a plan to, you know, drop, you know, I was never really overweight, but I dropped 32 pounds, which is unbelievable, truly got in the best shape of my life, and was cooking every single day for breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks. I mean, it was fun. And so I think going back and looking at, you know, the pandemic, certainly, you know, delivery businesses have exploded. They've you know, just gone from, you know, being, you know, a smaller part of everyday life to now it's, you know, huge. And one thing that I realized is that, you know, a lot of people were exploring how to cook, how to make new dishes. And it became a fun time for people, especially when they were locked down at that time, you know, to communicate with friends and family that they couldn't see. So they were cooking together. They were creating dishes, setting stuff back. And so I saw a flurry of activity around cooking and learning. It was a great time to learn. So I was very grateful. Again, awful experience across the board with businesses and including my business, you know, with the challenges of all the lockdowns, some restaurants closing, then reopening, then closing, then reopening. But in the end, you know, I think it's all about the pivot and, you know, keeping that momentum going. And so I'm really happy with having had the time to be able to reassess in ways that maybe I would never, ever do.
Mm-hmm. I think I love that because it's a kind of a sad truth in most industries that the more successful and busier you get, the less you actually do what got you there in the first place. And you know, I love writing, and when I became a magazine editor, I wasn't doing much writing. And for many chefs, you know, as you become more successful, it becomes more about the business development, the finance, the planning, the staffing, rather than actually being in the kitchen. So the fact that you had this time to reconnect with what got you into the food industry in the first place is amazing. I mean, it's more amazing that you managed to lose weight while cooking when so many of us put on, you know, the COVID-19 pounds rather than losing your 30 odd. And we saw all the time these kind of jokes about sourdough and banana bread and, you know, flour selling out in the UK, for example. But I think it did come back to that kind of communication and celebration and nurturing and looking after ourselves and looking after each other. And I think many of us have kind of forgotten that. So yeah, let's take some more positives from the pandemic, which, believe me, is a bit of a stretch right now, I think, for a lot of people around the world. We've got Chef David Myers with us.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
His restaurants have won Michelin stars. He is literally all over the world. LA is home, but he's lucky enough to, we're lucky enough to have a presence of Chef David Myers right here in Dubai. He's in town keeping an eye on things at Adrift Burger Bar, where the burgers are described as Venice Beach meets Tokyo in Dubai, and a very nice combination that is too. Chef David, before I let you get back to the kitchen, I've got a bit of a quick fire round, if you don't mind.
Great, bring it on.
Okay. First foodie memory.
Cooking eggs after watching a commercial on TV, and I wanted to make the most perfect eggs. I think I was 6.
Oh, that's early. The food smell that reminds you of childhood.
The smell of tomatoes. That just beautiful, almost green tomato smell. It's amazing, especially at 7 p.m. as it's like blooming.
Oh, most beautiful answer ever. Your comfort food.
Comfort food is, I have two. One is I love mashed potatoes. I think it's just really homey and cozy. That with roast chicken is great. And now soba noodles from Japan.
Ooh,
just love it.
Love it. Your guilty pleasure, if you have one. I personally think there should be no guilt attached to food, but some people do.
Oh, I don't put any guilt towards food, but I love all of those guilty pleasures that food can bring sometimes. But absolutely love cheesecake and love gummy bears.
Do you? Haribo. Do you know what? When I this sounds awful. When I climbed Kilimanjaro last year, gummy bears were like our go-to snack. And our guide had said, when things get bad at 3 a.m, you're going to need a snack that's going to make you smile. And it was like, bring gummies, which was amazing when you're climbing a mountain. But I don't think I can look at them in the same way ever again. Chef David Myers.
No,
I can't. They've been ruined forever. What is your go-to dish when tired?
Go-to dish when I'm tired, soup. It's just a really nice, either like a ramen or a chicken noodle soup. It's just, it's cozy, it's comforting, it's warm.
And what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Egg white omelet, oatmeal, fresh berries, and yogurt.
How very LA of you, your egg white omelet. They're everywhere now. We even have them in Dubai. Now, Chef, I needed to ask you about your desert island meal. We can be dark about it and say, you know, death row supper, but let's say we're going to send you a desert island and it's going to be rubbish. The food is going to be atrocious. And even you, with, you know, Michelin star restaurants and numerous accolades, couldn't make anything decent from this tiny plot of land in the middle of the sea. But before you go, you get to have the meal of your dreams, your starter, main, dessert, or indeed any combination. If you wanted to have three desserts, who am I to stop you? What would be on that menu, Chef David Myers?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, it would be starting with sushi from Sushi Shin in Tokyo. It's my favorite. Secondly, would be me grilling a steak with a great bottle of wine. That is like truly my happy place. So that's the second. The third would be a Junior's cheesecake from New York City.
Oh, and tummy's rumbling again. So last question for you. So what can we look forward to in 2022 from you? And what are you looking forward to as well?
Absolutely. Well, I am super pumped about 2022 in general. The fact that we've already made it through this long and far during the pandemic has just been unreal. We have some incredibly exciting openings coming up. We're going to be opening in New Delhi, our newest Adrift Kaya, a Japanese concept, which is near and dear to my heart. Cannot wait. That will be at the JW Marriott. We're also opening up two concepts in Doha. which are going to be incredible. We're looking to do an Adrift burger bar here in Dubai as well.
Phew, I was just about to say, don't you dare forget about us, because you can't come drop in for 6 months at Expo and then leave us hungry and waiting. So fingers crossed we could be seeing a permanent space.
Absolutely. Look, I'm not leaving here until we get it. I mean, I absolutely love Dubai. It's such a fit, and the reception we've had over the burgers has just been incredible. So that's definitely going to be happening. We've got some other exciting stuff happening in the U.S. as well. So, you know, I'm running into we're like sprinting into 2022. I've been preparing as if it were a marathon in 2021. Mm-hmm. So we are ready to go.
I am beyond delighted. It's great to hear some positive stories, some expansion plans. And last question, if people are going to Expo 2020 over the weekend and they come into Adrift, what is the one burger they should have? I think I know the answer, but I'd love to hear it from you.
Well, of course, it's the DM burger. They have to have the DM burger.
Okay, fine. Could you send one over to the studio? Much appreciated. Chef David Myers.
On the way.
You're
on
a star. Way. You can be found at the Gypsy Chef. Absolute pleasure. And as I said, Adrift Burger Bar there at Expo 2020. Chef, safe travels. And as I said, don't you dare leave Dubai until you've locked down some bricks and mortar, because we need more of this in our lives.
You're listening to Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are talking food this afternoon and exploring if you eat at Expo. It is January 6th, and I know a lot of people might have got on the vegan wagon for the month, or Veganuary. How is it going for you? Are you doing it? Veganuary is a kind of a non-profit that encourages people worldwide to go vegan during January, Veganuary, and beyond often. And during the 2021 campaign, more than 500,000 people took the pledge to try the vegan diet. And we've had an absolute explosion in vegan products and menu options launched around the world. And Expo 2020 is hosting a vegan festival for the first time in the region. We're joined now by Simon Wright, who's the founder of hospitality consultancy group TGP International. And they've helped curate the F&B offering for Expo 2020 Dubai, including the vegan options for that vegan festival. Simon, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for welcoming me on the show.
Absolute pleasure. You're a busy man, curating all of the foodie options. Before we talk Veganuary, I'd love to, if you'd take us back a little bit about where you even begin to put together the foodie offering for the biggest show on earth.
Well, I think being lucky enough to be in an industry that I absolutely love, it was almost like being a child in a candy shop in many ways. Already there were some great plans and ideas for Expo, and obviously in this wonderful sort of architecture that's been set up here. And so when we were asked at the beginning of last year now, to sort of give some thoughts and ideas as to how we could take it even further, it was just a wonderful opportunity to be able to talk to some great local chefs, some great international chefs and brands.
Some amazing names.
It was fabulous, really great. And I think trying to put together something interesting and exciting for every sort of pocket size, mm-hmm. was a wonderful challenge. But I have to say it's been a fabulous year working on it all and bringing it all to life.
I would never ask for your favourite foodie outlet, but have you had any meals to remember over the last few months, Simon?
And I name check a few, so go I don't on. Get into too much trouble. I think some of the most amazing food, I think the guys at Byron, Chef mm-hmm. Tommy from Beirut, is doing some really amazing flavours in there. Kutir, from Chef Rohit Guy from Chelsea in London, is just doing some really groundbreaking Indian food. Al Kabulin, the African food hall. It's just again. I've just actually been there for lunch now, so that's, as you can tell, that's one of my favourites. So that's pretty amazing as well. But you know, so many different opportunities and different chefs that have sort of come and shown their wares that we've been really spoiled, I think. What's happened so far?
Well, we were just chatting there with Chef David Myers, who of course has Adrift, and he said the exact same thing as I've been thinking over the last 6 months, that I think a lot of us underestimated what essential role food would play at Expo 2020 Dubai. I think a lot of us thought it would be about going, and of course that education element, which of course is a huge part of it, but we thought it would be a bit of a grab and go on the food front and a bit of an afterthought. And that's so far from the truth. It really is front and centre and a really part of that education process. You know, as you say, going to Al Kabulin and learning about African cuisine. And I say that as a cuisine made up of so many different parts and the diversity of countries and the different chefs and what they're bringing. And it's been amazing. We've now got Facebook groups set up dedicated to what people are eating at Expo. So if you do have any ideas and things that you've loved, let us know on 4001. We, as I said, are going to be cooking with Bread Ahead on Farmer's Kitchen next week, which I'm really excited about. The pizza is phenomenal. The lemon curd donut blew my mind. But we're going to put away the non-vegan cheese for a while because we are talking about a vegan festival that's coming the first time in the region. Simon Wright's joining us now. When's it all kicking off, Simon?
So we kick off on the 14th through to the 30th of January. Got lots of exciting things happening, not only in the existing restaurants where you just mentioned Bread Ahead, that we're going to be doing some vegan bakery classes there. We've got, you mentioned David at Adrift, he's going to be offering any of his burgers in a vegan version. So again, we're very excited to see that. And lots of the restaurants doing doing dishes and menus to, you know, sort of fit in with the Veganuary model. And then we've got our new little area, or not so little, I should say, a festival garden, where we're bringing in a number of sort of chefs and concepts into the city for the first time from overseas to really sort of show off that sort of whole Veganuary program.
You've got a huge number of outlets involved in this, from, you know, a UK plant-based restaurant that's made its debut in Dubai at Expo, Uppingham House. You've yep. also got some big names as well. Can you go on, give us a little, make us hungry, even us non-vegans?
So yeah, so we've, as you said, we've got some sort of food trucks coming in, which are just doing really great sort of street food, which is all plant-based. So as you mentioned, Uppingham House from the UK, Vegan Doko coming from the UK as well, doing great pizzas. We've got the guys from Holy Carrot who are doing a sort of an Asian plant-based concept that they have. But we've also got some great guest chefs coming in as well. We've got Chef Gloria Cabe, who's going to be working out of Al Kabul, and she does some amazing plant-based food originally from the Ivory Coast and now cooking in Paris. So that's sort of Michelin star level food, but all plant-based. We've got Matthew Kenny coming over again from Los Angeles, probably fated as the world's best vegan chef. He's mm-hmm. got a Michelin star in Los Angeles, and he's going to be doing some demonstrations and we'll be offering his food throughout the program as well. Lots of great things. And I think, you know, it's a great opportunity for people that might have historically thought that sort of vegan and plant-based food was all sort of very healthy, salad-based. We're doing great comfort food. That's what we want to get people to come and try and have a burger, have a pizza, have a hot dog, and hopefully get, even if people don't turn sort of full-time vegan, but to get a bit of flexitarian lifestyle, it's got to be good for you as well.
I'm really glad you said that because, you know, I'm not doing Veganuary. I'm just not. It hadn't even really crossed my mind, to be honest. I've got my parents in town. I've got kids who love me. It's just not an option. But what I'm trying to do is exactly that, eating more plant-based food. There's still, you know, considerable amount of meat kicking around. But it is an opportunity to bust a few myths. Simon, as you say, you know, I think, you know, the perception of veganism has changed an awful lot over certainly the last 5 years. We look at the offering in terms of restaurants and delivery options as well. Previous to that, it was thought of being a bit kind of knit your own yogurt and, you know, hemp seeds and things.
Tree hugging and
exactly.
things like that.
Whereas now it's more of a wellness, it's a planet move as well. And I'm fully aware, believe me when I say this, I know that when it comes to my meat eating ways, I'm on the wrong side of history. I know that. And it is just a matter of time before more people embrace veganism for the good of the planet, I'm sure. And, you know, and they will get messages through talking about, you know, growing almonds is just as bad as, you know, farming cows. But, you know, the numbers do tend to stack in the vegans' direction on that one. Simon, I want you to be completely honest. Are you embracing a bit of veganism for January?
I'm doing flexitarian.
Good man.
That's always my way of doing it. So I think this has been probably one of the biggest changes over the last 3 to 5 years, has been that move away from what was termed, and that's why I think a lot of people call it plant-based rather than vegan now, because there was perhaps a bit of a stigma about sort of, you know, veganism. As you said, it was almost that sort of hippie lifestyle, which, you know, nothing wrong for those people that want to do it, but it became a little bit sort of almost religious or cult-like. And most of my friends and colleagues in the industry who are in the plant-based community don't want to be quite as evangelical about it. They want to, you know, they want to show that, you know, it's a great option. It's better for the planet. There's obviously animal welfare involved. It's you know, generally for most people, that seems to be a healthier diet as well. So there's lots of great positive things about it, but don't have to force it down people's throat. And I think the one thing which we, you know, we've sort of worked really hard with everyone is it's got to taste great. It's got to be amazing food that tastes wonderful that just happens to be plant-based or vegan. I think that's the some of the most positive things about what we're trying to show during the Vegan January Festival here at Expo.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I've literally just checked out our Dubai Eye Instagram poll asking, are you going vegan in January? 91% of you saying no. I've got to be honest, I press no too, but I am trying to eat more plant-based. And speaking to a man now who is creating a festival that will hopefully introduce us to some options that are away from the usual perceptions of veganism. We are talking all sorts of pizzas, floozy cookies, Jamaican patties, and we've even got ice cream chocolate and an award-winning chef too. Simon Wright is the founder of hospitality consultancy firm TGP International. They have put together some F&B offerings at Expo 2020 Dubai, including the vegan options for the upcoming vegan festival, which kicks off on the 14th. Simon, if we could kind of zoom out from Expo 2020 for a moment, if you don't mind. What have you noticed in the region when it comes to vegan offerings, whether that is being incorporated into existing menu or, you know, venues specifically looking to cater to that vegan market?
So I think the region, there's a lot of interest sort of bubbling under. I would say it's a little bit behind sort of North America and Europe at the moment. However, the level of interest is definitely there. You know, most restaurants nowadays will offer a very good selection of vegan dishes on there. It's sort of expected. I think especially obviously in Dubai, there's always been historically a lot of interest in vegetarianism because you've got such a large Indian population here who obviously that sort of fits in with that demographic. So there's definitely a movement. We're starting to see some sort of specialist, you know, vegan-only plant-based restaurants now starting to come to the fore. The last weekend actually of at the festival here, we're going to be working with an association called Not Just for Vegans, which they're going to be bringing in sort of 60 different retailers who are all involved in the plant-based sort of you know, community, and we'll be offering all sorts of things from cosmetics to you know, to arts and crafts and everything else. So that sort of shows the interest and the sort of growth within the region, and we're probably waiting for the first sort of fully blown restaurants to start to happen, and we probably expect that, I would think, in the next year or so to start really coming to the fore.
Watch this space. But you're absolutely right. I mean, me growing up in the northeast of England, if you were veggie, you were getting a bit of portobello mushroom, and you'd count yourself lucky on the vegetarian menu. Whereas now we've got, you know, imitation chicken, grange, and you know, all sorts of options that aren't even meat alternatives, but just chefs being able to really get creative within that vegan space. An interesting question though from Trilly on 4001. Saying, keen to get Simon's take on why vegan restaurants and food products are more expensive than non-vegan ones at times. I find this does put people off from turning vegan. There's been discussion about this in the press recently, especially around those meat alternative burgers. And it seems to be lack of competition is the bottom line in so many product cases. What are your experiences when it comes to more the F&B side?
So, I mean, it is interesting. And I think as the movement has grown and chefs have become more interested in different ingredients, they've started to have to move a little bit further afield to find some of those ingredients, which does, especially in sort of places like Dubai, where a lot of the ingredients have to be imported, does start to push the price up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, then the sort of the processed sort of products like your Beyonds and your Impossibles, they've got a certain price tag and a certain brand cost, I think, that comes with them. But I think if you find chefs who are really creative, who focus on using you know, local ingredients that are relatively available, and then really focus on sort of getting the best from those ingredients and seasoning them and getting the flavors working, you can definitely keep those costs you know, definitely not more expensive than sort of regular meat products and proteins in them. So I think that's, you know, hopefully that answers the question a little bit.
It's interesting always to get someone else's take when, you know, you've got that wider view. We just go in and look at a menu and what we might order and look at the price next to it, whereas you obviously look at the business of food and you know, certainly movements in terms of your work as a consultant. Sammy, great question here, Sammy. Thank you for that. Saying, I find a lot of vegan food to be bland, so I go for the spicy Indian cuisines, dal, vegetable biryanis. There is a lot of flavourful veg options in Indian cuisine. Are there any other countries which have vegan options but full of flavour? Oh, good question. I mean, we're just talking there about Jamaican patties that are going to be there from Papa Bertie's at the Vegan Festival. Any other cuisines that you think are doing vegan options really well?
I think Middle Eastern, if you think about a lot of the meze dishes that you would go for, maybe sometimes more vegetarian than vegan. But again, and that's what's wonderful about Indian cuisine, because it's sort of been vegetarian. They haven't relied on the sort of plant-based, on the sort of the protein-based animal products. They've had to, you know, they've always, through the culture and the history and the religion, have always worked on producing these amazing flavorful dishes. And I think historically, the vegan and vegetarian dishes that you would have seen on traditional menus were almost an afterthought. And you know, I come from the same part of the world as yourself. And you know, if you ever went to a local restaurant and looked at the vegan or vegetarian option, it was sort of steamed vegetables or stuffed pepper or something that probably wasn't given a huge amount of love and attention. Whereas I think the you know, chefs now are genuinely interested in how they can make you know, the plant-based dishes equally as tasty as the animal-based ones.
And you know, let's be honest, yes, there's a creativity piece there, but there's also a bottom line. You know, when we look at the data worldwide, about 6% of US consumers identify as vegan. That's a lot of money to be leaving on the table if you're not looking after them. Simon, can I ask you lastly before we let you get back to Expo? I can tell by in the background where you are.
Apologies. Yeah.
No, it's all right. It feels like home. And I just wondered what else is happening aside from the food. You mentioned there's going to be a retail element, you know, your fashion and your cosmetics. But there's going to be music and some family things going on as well as part of the Vegan Festival. What can we look forward to?
Yep. So, as I mentioned, Festival Garden, which is a new area that we've just opened just before Christmas at Expo in the Jubilee area, just behind the Argentinian Pavilion. Mm-hmm. So we've created this beautiful outdoor area, which is obviously great with current restrictions around COVID. It means people are outdoors, so less sort of concerns from that point of view. We're going to have lots of children's activities, so perfect for families to come and relax during the day. So we've got all the bouncy castles and inflatables, face painting, arts and crafts, magicians, and lots of things there to keep children happy and entertained while mum and dad enjoy some wonderful plant-based food. And then going through into the evening, we've got great DJs and bands playing there as well. So hopefully something to do all day long, and not just to enjoy the food and the drink, but also plenty of other activities. And as you mentioned, at the end, we've got the retail element for the last weekend, where we'll have 60 different retailers down who will be sharing their wares. So hopefully lots of other things to enjoy and to do.
Thanks, Simon. Now, not wishing our month away, but what are you working on? Because I know obviously Expo running until the end of March. Anything you can reveal we might have in the diary before it closes up?
We've got lots of great chefs coming to visit during the time, but we're also probably looking forward to March. Our plan is to do a big global street food festival.
Wow.
So to really work with all the different chefs that we've got, and perhaps invite a few others that haven't quite made it yet to cook their favorite street food. And really, I think, you know, in keeping with Expo and you know, the 191 countries that are here, to really show off lots of different global cuisines, but what people enjoy eating you know, at street level, to come and enjoy that. So I think it's going to be a big party month.
A foodie celebration. March, so. Bring it on.
Exactly.
Simon
Wright. Lots of entertainment, lots of great food.
You're a star. Thank you so much. Going to let you get back to your busy day, and really looking forward to checking it out. As you say, Vegan Food Festival Expo 2020, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, starting from the 14th of this month.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We've just been talking with Simon Wright. He is the man behind creating a lot of the foodie concepts at Expo 2020, and including putting together some of the eats you'll be able to enjoy at an upcoming vegan festival. It is kicking off on the 14th of January. And we're speaking now, it's not just about the food, and it's not just for vegans. We've got Carly Dubridge. She is the founder of Not Just for Vegans. Tell us more about what's going to be happening there. Carly, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. All very good, thank you. Very excited about the upcoming Vegan Festival.
Good. I'd love to. We're going to be talking about what's going to be happening, but I'd like to go back in time, if you don't mind. Mm. Can you tell us when you, I mean, I'm guessing, are you vegan? I'm making a massive assumption there.
I am, yes. I've been vegan for 7 years.
Wow. Okay. And when and why did that start? Can you tell us a little bit more?
Well, the thing is with me, I've always been someone who goes, yeah, I really love animals, and I've always had pets growing up, you know, horses, dogs, chickens, you know, all sorts. And when I got my pet dog, she kind of made me think a little bit differently. I was just like, what makes the difference between a dog and a sheep, you know? So it kind of, it just, something clicked. And for me, it was more about how it made me feel on an emotional level. Mm-hmm. So I just felt much better knowing that I'm not contributing to any suffering. But the biggest thing is the impact that it has on the planet as well. You know, this is one of the best ways by not necessarily switching to veganism, but going more plant-based, being just a bit more thoughtful about our decisions.
I think that's, honestly, for me, that's it. And I said earlier to Simon that I do think I'm probably on the wrong side of history when it comes to not being vegan just yet. And I've got no doubt that it probably will play some part in my future. But for now, it's enough to be making some swaps, to be eating more fruit and veggies and to be swapping out meat, you know, if and when I can. And for me, that's kind of my comfort level. Maybe in the future I'll be in more comfortable place to go fully plant-based. I don't know. No name on this one, Carly, saying, I've been vegan for just over 2 months. Using a meal plan, vegan food in restaurants is great, but struggling with the meal plan. I find it too bland and boring. Any recommendations? So sprucing up some dishes. I know we're not really talking about food this afternoon, but you are an expert. Is there any advice you can offer this listener?
I would just speak to them about their menu, and I don't know who they're actually using, but there are some really good meal plans and they really vary. So depending on what you want to achieve, i.e. are you looking to lose weight? Are you looking just to stay consistent and having less meat? I've got a few friends who've got some businesses. Pumpkin Cow is one that jumps up, really healthy. They've got great vegan choices and a great meal plan. So I just did a little bit more research. We're actually putting together a directory by the end of January, so hopefully that will help as well.
Great idea, because it's kind of hard to keep up, and I mean that in a good way. You know, we have seen a real mm-hmm. explosion in vegan products, you know, in the supermarket, obviously restaurants, meal plans here. And you have a pop-up market that really hopes to inspire some vegan choices for non-vegans. And it's not about changing minds. I think it's more to do with offering alternatives and kind of educating what's in the place. Tell us about the market. Where did that idea come from, Carly?
Well, it started because when I set up my e-commerce, I wanted just this networking, and I found it really hard to find other business who are aligned to the kind of thing that I was doing. So I just thought I'd create a network, which was the vegan entrepreneurs. And within the first week, like 30 businesses signed up. And then now we've got over 300 businesses, which are local. So there is definitely, like you say, a growing demand. And that is how the market started, because I just thought, of so many businesses, we need to create a place where we can offer this. Now, not all the businesses are actually completely vegan, but our markets are vegan.
So what's your criteria, can I ask, in terms of when you're speaking to when you're speaking to a business and you're talking about their values, their ethos, their products, what are some of the questions you're asking?
Well, the biggest thing is, what are the vegan products they have, and the people who want to get into that side of the market? Because the whole idea of what the group is that we want to be inclusive. So we don't want to go, right, you're a business, you only have 100% vegan to be part of what we're doing. Because mm-hmm. that doesn't encourage conversation. And we need the non-vegan businesses and the vegan businesses to be talking. You know, we need to be connecting people. We need to be bringing products to supermarkets and things like that. So the only way to kind of do that is create this really inclusive environment where we can have open and honest conversations. So that was how the market kind of transcended. And it's the same thing. We want everyone to feel welcome. So if you're non-vegan turning up with a leather handbag, you're not going to get
I'm so glad there's not going to be kind of any throwing of red paint or anything as I turn up there in my trainers. Carly, you've got lots of questions coming in on this in terms of what's available here in the region and also on the food front as well. Mark saying, why do they try and make plant-based taste like meat? It's not appealing to long-term vegetarians. And this is a really diverse one, because a lot of people saying, you know, I'm a vegetarian because I don't actually really like that texture of meat. It's something I find a massive turn-off. And others who are transitioning maybe to more plant-based lifestyle want to kind of replicate what they might have enjoyed in the past. What are your thoughts and where do you stand?
I think that if they're vegetarian already, just don't eat the mock meats. It's quite straightforward. The idea of the mock meats is to help those people who are transitioning and who do love their meat. So I think it's great. Anything that kind of helps bridge that gap is awesome.
A question from Farah saying, I'm really concerned about use of leather. Will happily buy vintage, but are there handbags and shoes available easily here in the UAE? And what are they made of? Is this something that you've offered in the market? Are there any companies here catering to that?
Yeah, there's quite a few, actually. And this is how my business started. I'm selling cork handbags, so it is made from cork. So we will have a stand there at the market showing and exhibiting that as well.
There you go. Farah, we are here for you this afternoon, and indeed everyone else who's, let's say, vegan curious, or indeed is celebrating everything plant-based right now.
Join the conversation on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
On Dubai Eye, 103.8.
Talking veganism now is, of course, Veganuary for many people across the world, and a vegan festival taking place at Expo 2020. It kicks off on the 14th of this month. And we're also in conversation now with Carly Dubree. She is the founder of Not Just for Vegans. It's a pop-up market. She's also a community network founder of Vegans Entrepreneurs Middle East, which has now more than 300 different companies here. Tell us a little bit about the range of industries that come together to support each other and learn from each other.
Well, it's quite varied. It's like you say, it's not just food, although food is a big part of it, like especially when it comes to alternative cheeses and especially cakes and desserts, but also the skincare, makeup, perfume, as well as clothes as well. So there's quite a large number of things to think about, even down to like what you have at home and the cleaning chemicals that you're using and whether it's been tested on animals and things like that. So, yeah.
It feels like Dubai has really responded to this. And as I said to Simon Wright earlier, who's been creating the food side, it's almost unwise for a restaurant to really ignore the demands of the vegan customer when it comes to the bottom line. You're going to be leaving an awful lot of money on the table if you're not catering to their needs. And in the same way, you know, it's not just about food if you're leading that vegan lifestyle. There is the leather alternatives, skincare, as you say. I mean, even a photographer that I work with, you know, plants a tree for every photo shoot he does. There's a real kind of social conscience coming into play here, which I think is wonderful, to be honest. It's just many of us get kind of stuck in a groove of buying the same things time and time again and maybe making assumptions about the price of things as well. One complaint here saying things seem to be really, really expensive when looking outside of the norm. What would you say to that? And I mean, there is obviously the argument that if you're paying cheap, it's because, you know, the planet might be paying a price.
Yeah, it depends where they're shopping. Like you mentioned earlier, the mock meats, they tend to be more expensive. But when you go down to like raw ingredients or eating sort of like whole foods, you're talking about your beans and lentils. I think you said it's even bean day today as well or something. So that fits in nicely. So, those other ingredients aren't expensive. It's just whether you're willing to test out these other new recipes. And that was the part for me that was really fun, is that actually there's a whole world of other things that you can eat out there, and it's not just me. And it makes it interesting.
Jay saying, thank you for this. Are you open to more people joining vegan entrepreneurs? Are there any upcoming events taking place? I have no idea, Carly. Are you open to more members? And is there anything happening in the near future people could come along to?
Yeah, we're definitely always open for more members. The more people we have involved, the more people we've got supporting each other. And we have an upcoming event, which is really exciting for us, actually. It's going to be over in Expo at the Madra restaurant, and that's going to be with Chef Matthew Kenny.
Big name.
Do a Q&A. Yeah, he's going to do a Q&A session with us, and it's going to be a very nice informal networking event as well. So it's limited to 30 people, but if people want to get in touch with me, then we can put them onto a waiting list.
And Carly, can I ask you, when you look internationally, and you know, I'm sure it was much more difficult being a vegan in the kind of the early years when we think about alternatives in particular, when the products simply weren't there. Now we've got shop and ship, there's companies all around the world who are offering some amazing alternatives and innovations. Are there any gaps you think that need to be plugged here in Dubai when it comes to leading a plant-based lifestyle? And that could be food, it could be products. Is there anything that you'd love to see come to Dubai in the coming years?
I haven't missed anything. I'm just trying to think, because I've actually managed to replace everything, whether it comes to my foundation, my shoes, my coats. Maybe belts. Oh. I haven't got a nice alternative for a belt, because I don't really like to use plastic alternatives. So the other thing about the market is that we try to be more sustainable. So we're looking for sustainable vendors to be part of what we're doing.
A question here from Pia saying, thank you for this, guys. I refuse to wear any makeup that's not organic or animal friendly. Why do so many big celebrities still think it's okay? They've got a platform to educate and promote non-chemical makeup and to stop animal testing. Girls are using them because celebs do. I think it's disgusting that it's still being sold. Speaking of kind of, I guess, vegan influencers, is there anyone you think that's worth a follow, you know, internationally or regionally for the life they lead, some of the ideas they might have, and, you know, using their platform for good?
I'm trying to think, because I'll be honest, I'm not big on Instagram. I have someone looking after mine because I'm useless at it, so I'm not really... I do my research online, so
good for you. I love that. There's so much people buying into like the everyone needing to be the, you know, the be all end all of social media. Good for you. Outsource.
No, I check my messages, but I have someone else do the actual scrolling for me, and yeah, and she keeps me informed. It's brilliant.
I can't even imagine what you do with the time that the rest of us are wasting mindlessly scrolling on Instagram. last question from Myra saying, I did try and give up meat, but felt quite weak. Does Carly think veganism is for everyone, or does it simply not suit everyone?
I don't think it is for everyone, no. And I liked the term that Simon used earlier. It's about like flexitarian. If we can all make a conscious effort to just cut out a few days a week some meat, that's a huge impact if we all did that. So I think it's a case of doing what's right for you. And hopefully you'll find it'll easily transition into less and less meat. I mean, there's already a lot of people out there who are lactose intolerant anyway. So dairy is starting to sort of like phase out. You know, you're going to Starbucks and your cafe Nero's, people who aren't vegan are choosing to have some the other milk alternatives. So
look at our very own Chris McCarty. He's a changed man. He's having his oat milk lattes every afternoon. You'd never think about it from a bearded Scot, would you? Carly, thank you so much for your time. A number of messages going, where can we find out more? There's lots of information, of course, on the Expo website, but what about Not Just for Vegans? How can people contact you, or indeed your social media bods?
Yeah, if it's at Not Just for Vegans Market, or you can contact me on info@notjustforvegans.com, because like I said, we're looking for other vendors or exhibitors for the market. There's a few slots left, so if anyone's interested, they can get in touch.
Amazing. I mean, can I say happy Veganuary? I'm sure there's a card for it, but have a wonderful month ahead. It sounds like a hugely really exciting time. Excited to come down next time we're at Expo as well. The market is going to be there, the Vegan Festival at Expo 2020 from the 14th of January.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The sun might be shining today, but that hasn't been the case across the UAE over the last week. In fact, we've had numerous reports of people getting into trouble, getting into places they shouldn't have gone to when the weather has been not on their side. And of course, recently, a story of four women who became lost while hiking in Ras Al Khaimah's Wadi Nakab, brought to safety when they found themselves lost in the dark. To talk to us about some hiking do's and don'ts and what to do should the weather turn on you is Laura, the founder of Hike UAE. Laura, thank you so much for being with us. Happy New Year. How are you?
Thank you for having me. Yes, happy new year. I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I was thinking of you the other day, actually. We went for a hike, I think it was on maybe Christmas Eve. We were like, oh, we'll go to Fossil Rock, or should we go to Shouka? And we went to Fossil Rock and found it closed. And I was like, I remember now. So we went to Shouka instead. So Fossil Rock is now not open to the public, is that right?
Yes, exactly. So they have closed off Fossil Rock now. There's actually a barrier up, so you can't actually get in from the parking side. And that's just to protect the area, really. So there's been a few incidents. There's also been quite a lot of damage there with kind of humans leaving rubbish. So they're just really trying to protect the area. But there are a couple of hikes close by, such as Valley of the Caves, or like you said, Wadi Shouka, which is always a good option.
So where have you been recently? As I said, the weather has actually been rather lovely over the holidays until recently. Did you get anywhere new or revisit any favourites?
Yeah, so I was actually away over Christmas, so I didn't get to do any hikes over the festive period. And now that I'm back in the country, it has been really bad weather. So I'm kind of staying tight at the moment and not getting into the mountain, because unfortunately when the weather's bad, when there's lots of rain, the wadis in the UAE are quite susceptible to flash flooding. So it can be really quite dangerous. So for anyone keen to kind of get out and hike at the moment, I definitely recommend keeping a very close eye on the weather. If it looks like there's lots of kind of clouds in the sky, then it might be that rain is due, but it might not be showing on the weather forecast. Mm-hmm. So just be super careful. Don't take any risks, because like I said, flash flooding does occur and it can be quite dangerous.
What are some of the terrains you need to be particularly cautious of heading into, or even considering if there are clouds on the horizon?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So definitely avoid any kind of canyons that can easily flood. A lot of the wadis in the UAE, especially in Ras Al Khaimah, in Sharjah and Fujairah, are quite prone to flash flooding. There have been a few incidents in the past where people have had to be saved or unfortunately have not made it out again. And because of the nature of the terrain, it can flood really quickly, mm-hmm. which means that you don't have much time to get off the mountain. So definitely only go to places where you can easily come back out if there is rain. And if you do suspect that it is going to start raining, I would just say just avoid it for now. Don't take the risk. It's really not worth it.
Let's talk about some general hiking do's and don'ts. What do you think you should always carry with you as essentials, or even as a just in case, Laura?
Yeah, really good question. So there is something called the 10 hiking essentials, which is all of your really fundamental items that are really important to carry on your hike with you. For the UAE specifically, though, it's really important to always carry enough water. And the reason for that is there's no really natural drinking water sources in the UAE like there are in other countries. So you have to carry everything on you that you need. So always take more than you think you'll need for your hike in case you're out longer than expected. And then, of course, always take some snacks with you just in case. Take a way to navigate. So whether that be your phone with GPS, maybe there's a route you've downloaded using Wikiloc, or a map and a compass, just make sure that you always know your route and how you're going to get around. And then, of course, something that's really important is wearing appropriate clothing, especially footwear. I know that we've both seen people on hikes before wearing flip-flops, and actually it's really important to wear minimum trainers, but ideally hiking boots.
It's funny, isn't it? I saw a meme this morning and it was like, hey, dude with the two hydration packs and, you know, compass. My kid did this in flip-flops with a naked Barbie the other day. Chill out.
Oh, I saw that one as well.
I was like, yeah, that's me. I'm there with all the gear and a bit of an idea as people are, you know, going up past me on the Schauke steps. But no, because it's for good reason. You know, you have this kind of scree when you're coming down. You need that ankle support a lot of the time, and yeah, your Converse are not going to cut it. You haven't mentioned snacks, Laura. How can we be into this conversation and not talk about sustenance?
That's a really fundamental essential, isn't it? Snacks, definitely. Always take at least 5 or 6 bars with you, that's for sure.
What about the phone signal piece? Because you mentioned there about downloading Wikiloc, which you can have on your phone if you don't have any coverage. Any tips for trying to find, you know, the odd bar if you do need to get in touch with someone in an emergency?
Yes, it's a really good point. There are certain hiking locations in the UAE which don't have much phone signal. Wadi Nakheb, which is where the recent incident was with the ladies that got lost, that area is renowned for having no phone signal. So that one's really important to really know your route before you go and kind of be experienced enough to try it. Otherwise, if you do get into trouble, you can call the emergency services with no or very little signal. There's a system that was implemented in the UAE a few years ago which allows emergency calls to be made even if there's no signal on your phone. So that's something the government has implemented to keep people mm-hmm. safe. But ideally, kind of really know the areas which do and don't have signal. And if you're not experienced enough, then I would just recommend avoiding them and sticking to the kind of the well-marked trails that we know we have in Schauke, or we have in Hatta, or Ras Al Khaimah has some marked trails which all have signal as well.
Can I ask you, you know, should the worst happen and you've done your due diligence, you've packed everything you need to, you've checked the weather, but things do change, especially when you get into the mountains and we can have sudden weather changes and even flash floods. Has it ever happened to you? Have you found yourself in a difficult situation, Laura?
It's a good point. So definitely, no matter how experienced you are, you never know what might happen. Incidents happen all the time. I mean, you can twist your ankle walking down the street, of course. Luckily, I have never had an incident myself, but I have been with a group of people when somebody had a panic attack. So that wasn't actually linked to, twisting an ankle or the terrain or not being prepared. That was something which was completely unexpected. And in that incident, it's obviously really important that you stay together as a group, that you do look after each other, you take the necessary steps to make sure everyone stays safe. And if you really do need to call the emergency services, they are always there to help you. But what I would say is, only use that as a last resort, because most situations can be resolved by just kind of staying where you are, staying calm, having some water, taking a breather, and then deciding whether you continue or whether you just head home straight away.
I think that staying calm is really key. When I've done survival courses in the past, you know, you can survive with this many days without water, you can survive this many days without food, but if panic sets in, and it sets in early, you know, you can be really, really scuppered. And I think, you know, we are so lucky here in the UAE to have these amazing trails. But just because they are pretty accessible, and as you say, some of them are fairly well marked, doesn't mean we should take them for granted or take our own fitness for granted. Certainly never go out on your own either. And even when I've been out with just my husband, I have thought it's probably could probably do with a few more people here. What would you say about group sizes? And also there should be an upper limit too in terms of the law as well, right?
Definitely be really careful hiking on your own. You know, sometimes we really feel kind of liberated hiking on our own, and you know, it's really enjoyable, but at the same time, safety is the most important thing. And if you're on your own and if anything happens, then you need to make sure that you're in an area where there are people going to be around. So stick to the well-marked trails, like I said, only go in busy periods, so that if anything happens, you've got somebody there to support. However, the most sensible solution is always to go in at least two, if not three or more people. And that just means that you all support each other, you're all there as a group, and you know the route that you're meant to be doing. It's much safer then in a group. But at the same time, something that's important to know is that in the UAE, there are a lot of these groups which take out maybe sometimes even 100 people with only one guide or two guides. That as well isn't very safe, because there's not the right ratio for guide to hikers. So just be really careful if you do go in a group that you go with responsible and safe groups. For example, there's a group going this weekend called Adventurati Outdoor, and they have very safe hiking principles, and they have a certain ratio for guide to hiker. But like I said, if you are planning to go kind of with some friends without an organized guide, then just go with enough people and make sure that the routes that you're doing is also appropriate for everyone that's in your group.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. So looking ahead then to 2022, what's on your wish list? Are you hoping to do some travelling? Are you going to head abroad and conquer some summits? What are you thinking?
Oh, so there's so much that I want to do this year. Now the international travel is a bit easier. There's definitely some summits and some hikes abroad I'd like to do. I'd like to explore a bit more of the Middle East. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to Saudi in a few weeks, so hoping to maybe even do a hike there, which I'll obviously be sharing on Hike UAE as well. But in terms of actual UAE hikes, I'm keen to get over to Fujairah. It's an emirate that I've not been to as much as Ras Al Khaimah or Dubai Hatter, for example. And there's lots of amazing hikes there. Fujairah Adventures, I know, have kind of developed a few more areas. And there's a lot of water there as well. So really keen to do that. What about you?
Oh, good point. Well, I am tentatively signed up to go to Russia in July to go to Elbrus. So a very cold start to my 40th year on the planet. We're going to Rack this weekend. So hoping to...
Lovely.
We were hoping to do Jebel Jais, but we're going to wait and see what the weather's doing. If not, we'll go back in February when they've opened up. They're doing a luge there, like a sledder down Jebel Jais. So I think it'd be quite fun to do a bit of a hike up and a sled down. And just trying to enjoy the weather as much as possible over the next few weeks. It is absolutely gorgeous today.
Amazing.
So to everyone listening, stay safe, have fun. Check out Laura's account, as we said, Hike UAE, for loads of practical information and some route inspiration too. Laura, I was going to say happy weekend. I'm so confused with the days.
I know. Is it a work day tomorrow? Is it not? Who knows?
I'm not sure. I think it is a work day tomorrow. But enjoy the weekend. Get out and about keep us posted on all your adventures.
Amazing. Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Bye. Bye.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5pm.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.